Welcome to the Salt and Air Podcast. Let me paint a picture for you real quick. Cocaine, just mountains of it. Almost like that scene from Scarface. And a daydream about big rig trucks coming to life and trying to murder you. That is the premise for the movie that we're going to talk about today.
And? Wanting to do it yourself.
Starring Emilio!
Emilio!
Maximum Overdrive. Jude, this is your pick.
No.
Wait, who picked this then?
I sent both trailers of Emilio Estevez movies to Alex, and I said, choose. And he chose this one.
Well,
other one was Repo
The
Man.
Other one was worse somehow.
No. It was way worse.
I wanted to watch Repo Man.
Uh-huh.
Of course you did.
And Jude chose Maximum Overdrive, and we sent them to Alex. Uh-huh. Said choose.
Uh-huh.
And he chose Maximum Overdrive.
I was like, this one has a slightly better trailer than Repo Man.
The Repo Man trailer didn't do that movie justice.
Repo Man's like a legit cult classic.
Is it?
Oh yeah.
Why didn't anybody tell me this?
Oh yeah, Repo Man is like a weird movie that people like.
They have like the Quentin Tarantino, like they open up the trunk and it like glows. Yeah. And nobody knows what it is.
Yeah.
The trailer just looked weird. Shitty.
Yeah, it looked like a crappy trailer. And I was like, I don't want to watch that.
It's like 1982. They didn't know how to make trailers back then.
I guess not.
Not like now, where I almost got tricked in seeing The Flash.
I know, right?
Oh, it was close.
Trailers are good nowadays. They're good at tricking you.
They are good at tricking me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tom's here.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man.
Hey, what's up, brother?
It's good to see you again.
I feel like I saw you recently.
I think I see you every day now.
It's just all the time.
I'm upset you guys see more of each other than I do.
We need a receptionist in like 5 months.
Okay.
And Jude, you're here also. What's up?
I am here.
You're here.
Yes.
Welcome. Thanks for these two glorious picks.
You know what? It was a team effort.
It's great. Great job, guys. Kadesh is also here. What's up, man?
Yeah, so Matt Vader basically said, I'm out for this week. And we had plans on watching better movies, but we had talked a little bit about doing like an Emilio Estevez week.
Uh-huh.
And Alex's pick was, of course, The Mighty Ducks.
Of course. Why wouldn't you do The Mighty
terrible
Ducks?
Terrible movie.
It's awful, but it's better than this.
It inspired an entire sports franchise.
And Jude wanted Young Guns.
I wanted to do Young Guns, but I thought Alex would be really upset.
What do you mean, Vader?
Or, I'm sorry. I thought Vader would be really upset if we did that without him.
Yeah, because Vader would probably like that movie. So I suggested Men at Work, and nobody wanted to do that one.
Yeah, that movie does not hold up.
I suggested Slapshot. Everybody was like, "Nah." I thought that was a cool movie.
I mean, how many Emilio movies even are there?
Not that many.
Not really.
Yeah.
There's more than you think there are.
Emilio movies or movies that Emilio was in?
Emilio.
Young Guns is an Emilio movie.
Yeah.
So is Young Guns too.
Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about Young Guns too.
Did you see the size of that chicken?
It's still a great line. I throw that out there.
All the time.
I throw that out there. Time. Sporting events, at work. Yeah. I just throw it in an email. And just like, what chicken? What?
Anytime you don't know what to say in a conversation, slip it in.
Just slide it in there.
Yeah. Did you see the size of that chicken?
It fits in anywhere.
Yeah.
It really does.
It's it covers everything.
It's so funny.
Any situation.
And if you've seen it, it's just the funniest
movie. Young Guns 2?
No, it's Young Guns 1.
Oh, the first one.
They're on peyote. Mm-hmm. Come on. Keep up.
Did
keep
you
up.
See
I thought you were talking about the second one.
No one talks about the second one.
I don't know. Chicken.
I mean Breakfast Club. He was in that.
Oh shit, he was.
Yep.
God dang.
I love that movie.
I've never seen it. Never seen Pretty in Pink. Never seen 16 and Pregnant or whatever that one. What is that one called?
I've seen that one.
With
Paul Sorvino.
Yeah, with Paul Sorvino. That's what I'm talking about. That's the one.
I was raised on all of those movies.
You're not missing much.
I think they were girl-centric, and I was just, when they were like a thing, I was just too much of a boy. Does that make sense?
All right.
As opposed to?
A girl?
They showed us 16 and Pregnant in school. That's how I saw it.
Wait, that's the actual name of the movie? Is 16
no,
and Pregnant?
No, it's
16 Candles. I was like, wait a second. Are we talking about a different movie?
It's just funny.
Should we talk about this one?
Yeah, we should talk about Overdrive. Jude.
Yes.
Synopsis, please.
All right, sir. 1986, Maximum Overdrive. Rated R with a runtime of 1 hour 38 minutes. This had a budget of $10 million in 1986.
Wow. $5 million of that went to cocaine.
True.
Fair.
More like 9 million.
Yeah.
Did you see the gas prices?
No.
They were filling up like 200 gallons worth of gas. It was like $15.
That's a lot of money back then.
What do you think this brought into the box?
I don't know. 10.2.
Okay. Tomas?
What year was it again?
86.
30 million.
Okay. Had a budget of $10 million and a box office bring home of $7
million. Oh.
This did not do good.
No.
No.
Would you like to know what it's about?
Please, because I kind of don't know.
Okay.
I want to know what you're going to tell me it's about. That's what
I kept it short and sweet. In Stephen King's directorial debut, the tale of a comet hovers over just this one town, I guess, and makes everything with a motor or that uses electricity turn murderous. Emilio Estevez must keep his fellow truck stop mates safe from the bloodthirsty trucks circling the service station like sharks. And watch out for that electric knife! It's got a craving for fresher meat. The still alive kind. Discuss.
Did you guys happen to see the trailer for this movie?
I watched, yeah, that's how I picked it. I watched the trailer.
Yeah.
So in the trailer for this movie, Stephen King is like, I got tired of Hollywood ruining my story.
I don't think that's the trailer I sent to Alex.
Did you see that? No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah, yeah, so the one
we
watched.
Voiceover from
No. So Stephen King's actually in the trailer.
I think he directed the trailer as well.
And he's talking to the camera.
He's got powdered sugar all over his face. He's eating donuts or something.
Just eaten a donut.
he's talking to the camera, and he says, I'm tired of Hollywood ruining my stories. So if you want something done right, you got to do it yourself.
Wow.
And he basically just starts talking about how, like, he's directing this movie and he wrote it for, like, the screen and it's going to be the most terrifying thing you've ever seen. All set to the dulcet tunes of AC/DC.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The whole movie is the entire album.
It's the sound. The soundtrack's amazing to this movie. It's the only part that I liked. I was watching this movie and I was like, yeah,
it's just an AC/DC album.
That's fine.
There's no score
there's
to it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
AC/DC kicks ass.
Dude, pumping gas to AC/DC? Who doesn't do that?
I'm for it.
Here's the thing, though. So, like, there's a scene in this movie where this kid is going through suburbia, and he's looking at the carnage that basically, like, all these people are dead from, like, lawnmowers and TVs and stuff like that.
I have so many questions about this movie.
Me too.
Yeah.
But in this scene, so, like, this should be, like, a creepy scene, right? Uh-huh. But it's being set to, like, rock music.
Yeah.
So, like, fat bottom girls playing.
Totally undercuts the horror.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't make it spooky or eerie or offsetting. It just makes it kind of like,
metal as fuck.
it's kind of bad. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Because of the soundtrack, right?
Yeah, the soundtrack is hilarious.
Like, I mean, everyone's over the top. I mean, some of the best acting is that crazy lady screaming, "We made you."
You can! We made you!
Yes!
And shaking a missile at them, just shaking a missile. We made you! They're like, sit down! Jesus Christ!
I think the best acting is performed by the semi-trucks.
So the weird premise of this movie is basically that there's this comet, and for like 3 days or like a week or something like that, Earth's orbit is in the tail of the comet. Mm-hmm. So like
it's 8 days.
Okay, so 8 days, this comet's tail is like irradiating Earth with like weird magic.
The opening crawl, the little like the thing that explains how the story is going, like it was very specific. Uh-huh. It was like 8 days, 22 hours, 17 minutes and 35 seconds later. I was like, what? Why is it so detailed?
But then there's like an end crawl where it talks about the government found like a UFO hiding in the trail.
I thought we were going to save that for a big reveal later.
Geez.
Because my God, I read that at the end. I said, what the fuck is this?
Well, what's funny is, you know, Stephen King has his fan base.
Right.
I don't know why, but he has a fan base.
Oh, I love Stephen King.
And there are people who basically have theories about this movie, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the theories is that the radiation allowed the aliens to basically remote control all, like, the machines on Earth. So the machines didn't have a mind of their own. It was basically aliens controlling everything as opposed to the machines coming alive.
Right, because that's the big question the whole time through. Like, how did that lawnmower see me?
Yeah.
Like, what did it... Okay, I accept the fact that it's like a, I don't know, semi-possessed lawnmower, but how does it see me? It knows I'm there.
It not only sees you, But people start talking to like the trucks and stuff like that.
They're doing
and
Morse
they understand
code.
Those.
Morse code.
No, the trucks are doing Morse code, but like as they're walking by, they're like, "It's cool, man. Like
we're just gonna walk over across the street.
Are like, "Okay,
the
yeah.
truck, cool. the truck yeah. like growls."
You're like, "Okay."
If you don't take the movie seriously in any way, it's really
fun. It's fun.
Oh yeah,
I had fun. I had fun with the soundtrack.
I was worried all week that you were gonna be mad at me today.
Oh, I'm mad at you. I hate this movie, but I had fun watching it. I was like, "This is weirdly, stupidly fun."
Yeah, the whole opening scene of this movie is basically there's this traffic jam on a drawbridge, mm-hmm. and the aliens or the machines or whatever start raising the drawbridge.
I love the drawbridge trope, by the way. It's yeah. just so much. It's just anytime it's in a movie, there's someone jumping it on a motorcycle.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's chaos every single time.
Yeah,
I love
yeah.
it.
And this is after the movie starts with Stephen King making his obligatory cameo uh-huh. at a bank where the ATM's like, "Fuck you,
oh, that
fuck
was,
you."
I didn't even notice that.
You didn't notice
like,
that?
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice.
He's like,
no.
"Honey, this machine just called me an asshole."
Well, that was him.
It set me up. I was like, "I'm ready for this movie." like it framed the whole rest of the movie for me. It's yeah. like, this is going to be...
The machines have turned on us.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm like, okay.
I guess.
One of my favorite scenes is the vending machine scene at the baseball field.
Dude.
That was brutal.
That made no sense, though.
It made no sense.
Like, vending machines don't deliver drinks that way.
It does if it's angry enough.
Right.
But yeah, the guy was like standing there and it hits him in the balls and you're kind of like, "Oh, haha, that's funny."
He got hit in the ball like 7 times.
I know, yeah, and then it kept going and you're like...
That got real fucking dark.
And then
dark.
It got real dark and then he got hit in the head. And then the kid walks over and goes, "Dad?" And then his dad has like a can-shaped hole in his skull and yeah. he's like, "Wah." I'm like, "Oh my God."
Well, the funniest part was when the machine started like pegging those cans of pop at the kids and like the kids are just splayed out on the field.
There's like dead kids
yeah,
on the
yeah.
field
yeah,
when,
were
that,
they dead?
When that one... Yes!
Oh yeah, they died.
They died, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Well, there was also like the watermelon truck on the drawbridge. Mm. So like all these watermelons are getting spilled out and like hitting people and they're like, "Ah."
Yeah, that was hilarious because she was like inside of a car screaming at the top of her lungs because the watermelon was coming down and then it just kind of like splattered on the windshield.
Well, no, it broke through the windshield.
Did it break through
yeah,
the windshield?
Yeah, it did.
Those crappy 80s windshields.
Yeah, for real. What are they made of back then?
Saran wrap.
So the big, like, I guess, draw for this movie, because at the time, like, Stephen King books were getting adapted left and right. You had Carrie, you had all this stuff, The Shining. And so, like, Stephen King was like, "You know what? I'm going to take charge. I'm going to make this movie myself." And this was, he wrote this for the screen. This was based on a short story, I think he did. Basically, this was his directorial debut.
Mm-hmm.
But this was also around the time where he was coked out of his mind
oh, yeah.
constantly. Like this is in that period of time where like he can't remember shit
yeah.
because he was doing so much cocaine.
Yeah, what's the old adage? He doesn't remember writing Cujo or something. Yeah, like. He doesn't remember at all.
I think The Stand also.
Or something. Yes, yeah. It's like several books he has yeah. no recollection of writing.
So basically, like he doesn't remember directing this movie.
Nice.
But what's funny about
it... Imagine hanging out with Stephen King in the 80s.
Also, like...
God damn, that'd be a good time.
He had a traumatic brain injury, too, like about 15 years ago.
That was after this.
Oh,
I know, but
I'm,
if you're saying like he doesn't remember directing it, there's probably a lot he doesn't remember due to the
yeah.
van that hit him.
So, you know, this being his directorial debut...
I'm sorry, what?
You know, yeah,
he was
like
walking across the street and a van hit him and he like went into a coma.
Was it driverless?
No, it had.
It was controlled by aliens.
I was gonna say, I'm like, is this part of the story? Is this all part of the movie?
No, Dean Koontz was driving the van. He was tired of this shit. He's like, "I can't write better. Fuck this guy."
So, basically, there's a rumor going around here, and it's pretty well substantiated. But George Romero, the director of Night of the Living Dead and stuff like that, he was on set. He was kind of like mentoring King, and so like. The common wisdom is that George Romero ghost directed this movie because King was so coked out of his mind that he just didn't know what he was doing most of the time.
I mean, I guess he did his best.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I like the theory. Well, okay, let's have this conversation about the monster big rig truck with the Green Goblin
yeah.
face
the
on
toy,
yeah,
the toy truck.
The yeah. toy truck. Yeah. We were having a conversation earlier about what that Green Goblin meant.
Yeah. What's
I
the
feel
point?
Like I feel like it was a metaphor.
Maybe. Green, because okay, I'll say what I said during that conversation just so we can bring it back.
Yeah,
the Green Goblin is like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde metaphor. Like a lot of hero villains, like the Hulk is a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde,
sure.
You know, and it's like a science gone wrong. But why the Green Goblin?
It was a toy truck, mm-hmm. So it's like part of a motif.
Yeah, but toys are toys and comic books are comic books. Back then, it was very distinctly different things.
Yeah, yeah. Why the Green Goblin?
And
why
there's a Green Goblin Jack in the Box in the cab with his red velour interior. It was gorgeous. Like
nice looking truck.
If I'm going to drive a truck, I want that truck.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, why the Green Goblin?
And it, like the eyes glowed red when it got angry.
I think that is the cocaine demon that Stephen King saw when he finally got to sleep after like 3 days up on coke.
Yeah. That's what it is. So the story behind that.
Oh, you have a story behind that?
Oh, of course you
Look at this guy, you sandbagging son of a bitch. Give it to us.
All right, so the story behind that is, number one, they wanted something to make the main monster of the movie like stand out.
Okay.
But Stephen King was a fan of Spider-Man. And so he was like, hey, put the Green Goblin's face on that fucking truck.
God, I hope it went down exactly like that.
And that's exactly how it went down. He's like, the Green Goblin's fucking scary.
Does that make Emilio Estevez Spider-Man in this movie then?
No.
No?
No.
That was a quick turndown. Gee, thanks for entertaining my idea.
Wow, that was a negative.
No.
It wasn't even, there was like no emotion to it either.
The initial immediate was like, that's not what they said in the book that I read, in the YouTube video that I looked at. That was never, no, yeah. Alex, no.
No, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's harsh. I mean, I get it. You have to have something to distinguish the bad guy, right?
I think just
having. But what about like eyelashes on the front end? You know, that'd be really cute.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then it's like cute and dangerous.
Oh, now you want to make the bad guy a woman?
No.
Well, they did that already.
Like a Hello Kitty on the front? It's terrifying for different reasons.
Or what, like a zip-tied teddy bear to the front of the grill?
Now we're talking.
Now we're getting somewhere.
It's a toy truck, right?
Yeah.
We can have like a zip, like he's
like he's strung up almost like Jesus, because you know Stephen King loves his freaking metaphors.
Oh, now you're making it sacrilegious. Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. every religious person, didn't they run over a Bible in this
yep.
movie?
Yeah. The Bible salesman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his like...
But he was rapey.
He was rapey.
His attaché with his Bibles in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The rapey Bible salesman. Mm-hmm. Stephen King hates religious people.
I wish I lived in a time where I could sell Bibles door to door and get like a red Cadillac and pick up a hot chick hitchhiker and just...
get all handsy.
Just get... And the worst thing that happens is like, I'm going to cut your hand off. And he's like... we'll try it again in 5 more minutes.
She'll just, forget.
He goes to the diner. You know, it's having a great time.
He's just living life, man.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. You know what's
the
funny about...
The world used to be better. That's all I'm saying.
You know what's funny about this movie? If you guys ever saw Day of the Dead, mm-hmm. the George Romero sequel, yeah. Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, sure.
This is basically the same movie.
Hmm.
It's mm-hmm. basically all these people kind of get trapped at a truck rest stop. And the trucks that come alive surround them so they can't leave. And they find a cache of military-grade weapons that were stored at this truck stop.
My God, you're absolutely right.
And they start fighting back. And at the end, they have to abandon the truck stop and make it to a boat to sail to a safe harbor.
Why 100%. Wasn't the boat alive? I have so many questions.
It was a sailboat.
It didn't have an engine or a motor, no electricity.
They specifically went to a sailboat so that they could be safe.
Yeah, and they were going to sail to an island where there's no electricity.
Well, also, they were sailing to the island Haven. Which it was eventually made into a TV show called Haven on the Sci-Fi Network, which was based on a Stephen King novel.
God damn it, now we have to watch that.
I love the interconnectivity of Stephen King nonsense. Well, it's my absolute favorite thing.
Well, what's interesting is like this movie, so usually Stephen King's stories are set in Maine, right?
Yeah, almost always. I thought it was weird. This was like North Carolina or something?
Yeah, this was North Carolina. It's one of the few movies of his that isn't set in Maine. And he chose... to set it in North Carolina for some reason.
Huh. Better cocaine, don't
you? Yeah, probably easier access to cocaine.
That's where the cocaine comes in. You go right to the source. It's like a cocaine farmer's market down there. Hey, look at this coke. This is better than that coke. I like that.
One of the things that made me really laugh about this movie is when the trucks finally started communicating with them and they were like, give us fuel. And we're like, oh my God, we got to go out there and fuel up all these trucks. And it was like a montage of like slave work. They're out there like sweating to death, like, oh my God, pumping gas is so hard.
The pumping gas in the shade.
I'm like, why are you exhausted? Like, oh my God, I've been doing this for so long. It's been 5 minutes. You should be fine. They're like, they're sweating and they're like collapsing on each other.
There's allegories here.
I'm like, what's happening right now?
It's something to do with we use the machines too much and now they're using us.
Oh, see how
and
it feels it's to
like,
be used.
It's like, okay. It's like that comet came during Flintstones times.
It'd be the dinosaurs.
Like, yeah, the woolly mammoth vacuum cleaners kicking your ass now. Yeah. You know, it's a thing. You know, it's like humans use too much shit.
Well, you know,
use less shit.
You know, it's funny, is as we were watching this, I was like, these guys just have to wait until these trucks run out of gas, and then they can just, like, leave. Like, there's no more danger. And then at a certain point in the movie, a military scooter shows up with, like, a...
With a gun on it?
With an M80 machine gun on it.
Can I talk about, like, how horribly designed that military equipment was? There was no flat seat. I don't understand how to drive it.
It almost felt like one of those, like, things that you attach to the back of a train. Yeah. Or, like, you know, they're guarding the train or something like that.
It was like a free thing that came with a G.I. Joe. Like, and it comes with this battle wagon. It's like a
battle wagon.
but basically, this military machine gun shows up. And up to this point, they made it clear that basically only things with motors or electricity could be controlled by whatever. And all of a sudden, this machine gun shows up, and with no electricity or motors or any moving parts that could even be remotely controlled, starts putting down suppressing fire in the rest stop.
And it knows where people are.
Was that an unintended pun when you said remotely controlled? Mm-hmm.
I think it was.
Oh, unintended
pun. I picked up on that, too.
Yeah, so basically, this gun holds the survivors.
The sentient gun
holds the survivors hostage and starts communicating in Morse code. And luckily, the only smart character in this entire movie, which is a 12-year-old boy, knows Morse code.
He's an Eagle Scout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know Morse code. I'm an Eagle Scout. Well, son, tell us what it's saying.
Yeah.
God dang it.
He was the only redeeming character in this entire movie, by the way.
He was the only one anybody cared about.
Yeah, because he was the only one who was smart. Like he's the one who put up the catcher's mask to protect himself from, like, the flying soda can.
He's a survivor from the beginning of this movie.
Yeah. He's an Eagle Scout.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's established. Yeah, he is the most prepared person in the movie.
But this machine gun basically tells the survivors, it's like, look, you need to refuel us. Otherwise, I'm going to kill y'all. And I'm like, just go in the basement where all the guns are and wait them out. And get your, instead of yelling, we made you, actually shoot the gun to eliminate the threat.
I want you to talk about that for a minute because that's a sticking point for you. We made you. What was your thought process
Imogene,
when you watched that?
Was that her name? Imogene?
Well, it didn't make any sense because she hardly said anything the whole movie, right? Just very little.
This is the waitress at the
waitress.
Who gets
with
cut
the suicide
up.
Scars? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, she got cut up by the electric knife in the very beginning of the movie.
That's
right.
And
same
then,
trick?
Like, 5 minutes later, she's serving everyone food as everyone else who works there is just, like, sitting in a booth watching the things going on.
They just put a Band-Aid on it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But she has, like, 10 lines of dialogue in the whole movie, and 40 of them are "We made you."
Want to know? You can't do this. We made you.
And she just keeps screaming it over. It's so bad that you have to like it. Huh. It's just one of those things. The movie is terrible, right? It is, and I don't think it was meant to be good. That's what I'm hoping, you know, because like when you watch some movies and they're really bad, but they tried to be good. It's just terrible, right? But when
you
watch
you sad.
It, and it's campy and fun and over the top, and the over the top vibe, everything's over the top. Then it's you know, just have a drink, sit back, and enjoy the shit show because it's gonna be a shit show.
Yeah. That's kind of my feeling with this movie too. But I don't know, surprised at how much I didn't hate it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm like, this with a wacky movie with this wacky soundtrack. They just hit play on the record and they were like, just whatever happens. Well, it doesn't have to fit. Music doesn't have to fit the sequence. Mm. Music doesn't have anything to do with it. Mm. It's just like, we have AC/DC.
Well, if I've learned anything from films is the soundtrack and audio recordings really play no factor into the overall movie. Like, you know, it does nothing to me. You watch a scary movie, the sounds and all, nothing. No, that's nothing for me. No. I think it has nothing to do with it. Mm. Two completely separate
things. I often watch movies completely on mute.
Yeah, just mute it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, why do you need anything?
No.
I'll figure it out myself. I'll make my own music in my own head.
Right.
Well, the story behind the AC/DC soundtrack is actually kind of funny.
There's a story.
I feel like you did way too much research for this movie.
You really
did. This movie does not deserve it.
We picked this movie a day ago. What's this? You've just been frantically searching Wikipedia?
Well, if you look into Stephen King at all, if you know anything about like Stephen King and his history and stuff like that, which is actually pretty fascinating. So he was a huge AC/DC fan. And when he got his big break to direct this movie, he was like, I want AC/DC to do the fucking soundtrack. And so he went to an AC/DC concert and got backstage and he was like, guys, you need to do the soundtrack for my movie. Mm-hmm. And then he went and proceeded to sing one of their entire songs from beginning to end. And the AC/DC guys were like, you're crazy, man, but I like it. And so they basically agreed to like let him use songs that they had already written in the movie. Like they didn't do anything.
Yeah, there's nothing original. New. Yeah, there's no Maximum Overdrive AC/DC song.
Yeah.
God, wouldn't that be amazing? If AC/DC did
Maximum Overdrive.
Like how Queen like made songs for 1,000 movies. Is AC/DC like, yeah, fuck it, mate. We'll just fucking.
Sounds
here's,
good.
Here's how I imagine that exchange happened. Mm. Stephen King walks in. He's backstage. The band is there. And Stephen King goes, you guys.
Is he more like Rick Sanchez or is he more like what's his name from Pulp Fiction? What are we going with here? Like
Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction. We're gonna go with. Is he more like cool? Like
no, he's frantic.
Frantic? That's what I'm saying.
He's frantic.
When he comes in, is he Rick Sanchez when he comes in there?
Yeah.
And he's just drooling a little bit.
Yeah.
And
he's,
spouting
he's
insanity.
Very sweaty.
Or does he walk in really cool?
No.
You know, you talking about John Travolta?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Are we talking Travolta walking in?
No.
Vic Vega?
If Vic Vega walks in, he's super cool with his ponytail. He's got a gun. He's got a sweet suit on. Just kind of slides in the room and. Or is it Rick Sanchez kicks a door in, one eye's droopy because there's too much cocaine in his system. He drops a bottle over here.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. He had a ponytail earlier. It's just kind of over here now.
I feel like it's more Tony Montana.
Is the gun full Montana? He just goes, listen, guys, I'm doing this movie, and I want you to do the music for it.
That's going
to
be trucks. There's going to be trucks.
Trying to kill people.
Yeah. I'm picturing more like Chris Farley, like, in a world.
Yeah.
Like, let me explain it to
you.
Yeah,
how does this movie pitch go?
Yeah, so I'm saying. Like, it all depends on the pitch man.
Yeah.
Like, who do you send in for the pitch?
Mm-hmm. Well, it was King himself. He went in there and pitched this movie. I wanted to be a fly on the
wall. Because he needed to do it himself if it was going to be done right.
Mm. I've heard
that. And if AC/DC had said no, he would have sang those songs himself.
Yeah. Oh my God.
He would have just done
freaking. It's just like karaoke Stephen King.
Yeah.
Just singing the soundtrack to Fat Bottom Girls in the background.
Dirty Deeds and Under Cheeks.
That'd be so good.
Uh-huh. Oh, I love it.
Oh, it'd be so good. And I love Stephen King. I probably read 30 of his books.
Same.
I've read Richard Bachman books. You know what I mean? Like, I like Stephen King's writing. I like his imagery. I'm a big fan. I'm never a fan of Stephen King movies.
Really?
No. I mean, like, Green Mile, sure. Shawshank Redemption, sure. But those don't really count, right?
Sleepwalkers.
Oh, God.
I love Sleepwalkers.
How dare you invoke that name during this conversation? Oh, my God.
It had Mark Hamill in it.
Listen, Cat's Eyes. Just about the terrible movies that don't make any sense.
I love Cat's Eyes.
Oh, my God.
Of course she does.
Of course you do.
Little Drew Barrymore.
She was in that movie,
wow,
too?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought she was just in Firestarter. Then she bounced.
Mm-mm. Another good one.
Firestarter's not bad.
Speaking of cocaine, Drew Barrymore loves cocaine, too.
Back in the day.
Yeah. There's weird stories. Like, 8-year-old Drew Barrymore, like...
You were telling me stories about that when we talked about Firestarter.
Yeah.
Like, her whole life growing up was just, like, Hollywood weird parties.
Yeah. Her parents were not really there. If they were at the same party.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he were getting, as long as you do it under our roof, then it's fine.
And then they had her committed, and it was just bad.
And then she married Tom Green.
And now she's got a talk show.
Good for her.
Full circle.
Yeah.
She got full Robert Downey Jr. on us.
And that was after she did Playboy.
What?
Against Steven Spielberg's recommendation.
I do not remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because.
It wasn't memorable, apparently. Oh!
Are you serious? You don't remember that?
No memories.
Wow.
Must have been during my cocaine days.
Memory serves, I want to say it was David Letterman. That's who she like jumped up on his desk and she like flashed him.
Yeah.
And then.
Never seen this?
But he was like an old family friend.
Oh my God.
And so when she did Playboy, she sent him a copy of it, but she had like something put over her boobs. So and it was just like a little joke.
Steven Spielberg made a quilt for her that said cover up. and sent it to her. It was a whole thing.
That's
dude.
Crazy. Yeah.
Or maybe it was thing. Stephen King that she did that. I forget.
One of the Stevens.
Yeah.
No, it was Spielberg.
He just knows.
Matt's like, no, it's in my notes, actually. Like, he's like, I had a spider web of notes on this one.
It's a famous story because basically.
I have no knowledge of this.
Spielberg, you know, he E.T. felt. Yeah, yeah. But he felt bad that she was like kind of Britney-ing herself, you know, spiraling
Britney-ing?
Out of control. Yeah.
Oh my God, I hope that becomes a real word.
And
if microaggression can become a word, Britney-ing can become a word.
Britney? Like Britney Spears?
Yeah. Britney-ing.
Oh, she went full Britney?
You know, you're Britney-ing.
Oh, no. You never Britney-ing.
You never go full Britney.
No, I never go full Britney. Good Lord.
Yeah, but Spielberg was trying to look out for her because he felt responsible because, you know, he'd known her since she was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yep. E.T.
What a trip.
Yeah.
Hollywood's weird, man.
Yeah. Oh, tell me.
Real weird.
Do you want to have a whole separate podcast about Thomas's thoughts on Hollywood?
We're done with Maximum Overdrive,
I mean,
right?
We're kind of done. Like...
No, I have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah, do you?
Oh, yeah. Lisa Simpson's in it.
Yeah.
And it's
Curtis!
It's definitely my favorite part because if you close your eyes, it, she doesn't like change her voice to become like Lisa Simpson. It's just her voice.
Uh-huh.
So it's Lisa Simpson with a slight Southern accent yelling at her husband and cussing him out the entire movie.
Uh-huh. Get in right now!
And it's Curtis being like a hero the entire movie.
And just his wife is like, just berating
and
him.
And she's just beating the shit out of him just every day. And how old is she, by the way? Is she 14 or 80?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it's their wedding day.
It's their honeymoon.
They just got married.
Yep.
And she's like, Curtis, you son of a bitch!
Yeah. Oh, she's cussing him out the entire time in Lisa Simpson's voice.
Dude, I completely...
It is so goddamn funny.
Until you just told me about that, I completely blacked out those two characters. I was like, who is he talking about right now?
Curtis was a hero.
Yeah, the blonde dude. Yes. Skinny blonde dude.
She's like, don't go save him, Curtis. He's like,
and then,
I have to.
And then his wife, who was just an absolute pill the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
That's Lisa Simpson?
That's Lisa Simpson, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, there's another actor cameo in this movie that you guys might not have noticed, but I noticed it right away.
Of course you did.
Who was that?
So you remember the guy who was in the truck stop game room when it went crazy? He started stealing all the cigarettes.
The black
and, like,
guy?
The coins, the black guy.
Uh-huh.
Did you recognize him at all?
No.
Mm-mm. That was Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad. Gus? Yeah.
Get out of here.
Him.
Whoa.
That's wild.
You guys didn't recognize him?
No.
Not at all. Uh-uh. I still don't.
It was one of his like very early roles.
He's very specific now. He's like very much a character, you know.
Yeah,
he looks a certain way.
Yeah,
he has the little glasses, and he looks so. Back in '86, I mean, it was a very different look.
Right,
I did not spot that.
Yeah.
Did the guy who was driving the toy truck at the beginning of the movie,
Frankie Faison,
is he's from Alien, right? Was
he's been in so many things. Like he's one of those character actors that just shows up.
Yeah.
He was actually in one of Jonathan Tropper's shows, Banshee.
Oh,
was he? Okay. He was the bar owner in that show.
And
he's been in The Wire. He's been in so many different things.
Okay.
And the Hitchhiker Girl, it was bothering me so much I had to look it up. I was like, I know her from something.
Uh-huh.
What do I know her from? She was the sister in What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Honestly,
she's cute.
A lot of people in this movie are those like, who is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There are a lot of those.
Barely talked about Emilio Estevez.
You know what? Did he get fired like at the beginning of it? And he just like stuck around for his shift?
No, he didn't get fired. So basically he's an ex-con. He's out on parole. And the only job he could get was basically cooking at this truck stop. And the owner, because he hires ex-convicts, he basically does what Tom does to Alex and forces him to work overtime with no recourse.
So, I don't know where he's making this up for. I didn't say nothing.
It's going to be hell to pay at the office tomorrow.
He gave me the day off today. He said, don't come in.
Mm-hmm. No, but so he didn't get fired. He was just being forced to work a double shift without, you know, any recourse to it.
Hmm.
You know, if I could work there, I would.
At a truck stop?
Well, there's like a full arsenal in the basement. There's there's an arcade.
Yeah.
Yeah, just out of the blue.
That's it? That's all I need.
There's a bed.
There's a bed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's access to the sewers?
Yeah.
Somehow?
Apparently the asshole owner of this truck stop uses it as a smuggling way station for military grade arms.
Yeah.
As perfect. You do.
As yeah. you would.
Just out of the blue.
Yeah.
So they could have stuff blow up, I guess.
Fun fact, that's what all truck stops are.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. Just smuggling operations for arms.
And humans.
Hey, there's a whole subculture out there in this like trucking world that you don't even know about.
I know about it.
Whoa. I've been learning over the many, many years that I've been working in different various fields. Mm-hmm. And they're all criminals.
Yep.
They're all on drugs.
Yep.
And they are unreliable.
Yeah.
Well,
in the town where I grew up, there is a strip club attached to the truck stop.
That's smart. Yeah. I like that.
I mean, that's just good business.
That's just good business.
Makes
right
sense.
Yeah. You threw a jerky hut right next to that. Shit, everyone stop.
Forget about it.
Everyone stop.
We had a conversation the other day about those truck stop go pills.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, it's just legal meth.
Yeah, I think my exact words were, I think I would rather take meth than whatever's in that bag.
You have to snort it, though.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what's in those bags. I don't.
I said, goddamn.
I'll take my chances with the street meth. I don't know what's in that bag.
Crack one open and go for 4 days in a row.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, I don't know what country makes those. I don't know.
There was a very weird scene in this movie where after it's revealed that the truck stop owner has like a handheld like rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Emilio decides to interrogate like Bubba, who's like the other mechanic.
Oh my God.
And he does so in the bathroom as Bubba's taking a dump.
Audibly.
Audibly.
Yeah. There's so
a real dump was taken during the filming of this scene.
Emilio goes and takes a piss, and as he's taking a piss, he's literally interrogating this other guy who's right next to him taking a shit. And it gave me flashbacks to Poultrygeist as we were watching this.
Why?
Yeah. But I was like, you could have done this scene anywhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
And I think Stephen King thought that it would be funny.
Yeah.
It was just like
both actors had to go.
It was the most horrific scene in this entire movie.
Yeah. Once again, sound effects mean a lot in a movie. Yes.
You're going to get up.
The soundtrack, sound effects. I mean, they didn't have to put the splashing. I mean, and it was like fart noises and splash. It was like a 6-year-old wrote the scene. It was and he's like talking to him casually through the whole thing. He's like, hey, buddy, just tell me a little bit about, you know, the weapons. He's like, bloop.
Bloop.
And then there's a scene where, like, instead of just making a run to, like, save the Bible salesman who just dies anyway, they decide...
Fuck that guy. That guy sucked.
Yes, but they decide to try to get to him by going through a sewer line.
Mm-hmm.
So Emilio Estevez and Lisa Simpson's husband are, like, making their way through the sewer line, and they're making comments about how, like, they're literally traveling through piss.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get it in their mouths and, like, all this other stuff. And then, like, when they get out of the sewer line, they're perfectly dry.
Yeah.
Nobody comments on the smell.
They're hugging people.
Yeah. So, like, Stephen King has, like, this weird, like, bathroom thing going on throughout this entire movie.
It's a theme.
Very weird.
Nobody even changed clothes.
Well, didn't it happen in, like, a day and a half? No, it said it was, like, a week.
Yeah. They're there for 8 days.
But how long was the movie... Like, that's how long the comet was going to be around, but how long did the actual movie take place? I feel like it was only, like, 2 days.
At least a couple of days.
Yeah, I believe it was, like, over the course of 2 days.
Mm. Okay.
But the crazy thing is, like, the only person who ever changed her clothes or got gussied up was the hitchhiker girl.
Yeah, she was traveling with her bag.
Yeah, but Emilio was wearing the same wife beater and stuff like that the entire thing. Yeah.
She says she changed because she got that guy's stank on her.
Yeah,
and she was like,
she smelled him from being in the car with him.
I smell and
now
like him
that, but now that he's dead, she has to change.
That was weird.
Yeah,
that was a weird line of dialogue.
All of the dialogue is weird in this.
She was good with like the Old Spice aftershave smell for a while.
It's just on her thigh though.
Yeah,
Oh.
It was probably all over his car.
Yeah,
and then she banged Emilio.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah.
Like immediately after that.
Yeah.
She put on a little dress and felt cute, and she's like, hey. Uh-huh.
You know what this ensemble's missing? A little dick.
Well, you know what I could use? A little dick.
Maybe like just the tip.
Not that dick.
And the full. And the full.
Not that one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Dick, goose.
You know what's funny is how much Emilio Estevez looks like Martin Sheen and
Oh my gosh.
Just looks exactly like him with like blonde hair and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Charlie Sheen barely looks like him. Emilio Estevez looks exactly like his dad with blonde hair and blue eyes. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I think he's a clone. We're going to get back into this more Hollywood weird
your
stuff.
Your clone theories.
The clone theory with Hollywood.
There's a lot of them.
I mean, it's fun. It's a fun theory.
Yeah.
Once again, I don't believe half the stuff I talk about.
I know you don't.
It's just fun.
But I'm like
to throw things out there and watch the normies just start freaking out.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? Gravity is real. Like, like maybe it's not. I was taught in fifth grade that it was real.
What do you mean Hollywood makes clones?
Yeah, I tell you.
Oh, did you watch that documentary?
Which one?
The King of Clones?
No. Oh, cool. The one you're talking about?
Yeah.
No, I didn't watch that.
Weird.
I had to watch Maximum Overdrive last night. Only have so many hours in the day. So.
I don't know what else to say about this movie.
So,
there's a lot to say.
This movie's terrible.
Yeah.
But.
Actually, you ruined it for me because it literally is Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Like almost shot for shot. They literally go to a sailboat. I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks.
But there is one thing I have to give this movie that if this movie had never been made. Mm. It could have changed the course of so many lives. And basically, it comes down to this. So this movie was produced by Dino De Laurentiis, one mm-hmm. of the famous schlock Hollywood producers. And Stephen King.
Schlock.
Yeah. Oh, he's made a lot of schlock, Dino De Laurentiis. But
I think Tom just likes that word.
He's a mashuga.
But Dino De Laurentiis, or I should say Stephen King, before he directed this movie, he saw another kind of indie horror movie that really inspired him.
Dawn of the Dead?
It was called Evil Dead by Sam Raimi. And basically, he was so impressed by this movie that he gave a quote for it, said it was the most terrifying movie he'd ever seen. And that gave that little movie, that little independent horror movie, a huge amount of attention. And around this time, when he was making Maximum Overdrive, Sam Raimi was trying to raise funds to make the sequel. And Stephen King went to Dino De Laurentiis and said, hey, these guys are super talented. Their movie Evil Dead was amazing. You need to help them get their sequel made. And so it was because of Stephen King and this movie, because of his association with Dino De Laurentiis, that Dino De Laurentiis produced Evil Dead 2. And we would not have Evil Dead 2 if it were not for Maximum Overdrive.
Wow.
We might not have Tobey Maguire Spider-Man.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Sam Raimi and, mm-hmm. that built off of Evil Dead. Woo.
Deep cuts.
Woo. Maximum Overdrive was an important film.
It actually was.
Wow.
Oh no, Alex, it's broken.
It was an important film. We might not have Sam Raimi if not for this stupid movie. That's fun.
He still would have made
it. I mean, Sam Raimi movies are all pretty stupid, but they're fun.
Yeah.
And Maximum Overdrive is a stupid movie that was fun. It all makes sense. Full circle.
Yeah, we wouldn't have Xena Warrior Princess. We wouldn't have.
Man, I love Xena Warrior Princess.
That was the
was that
shit.
Saturdays? Was that Saturday?
Yeah.
It was Hercules and then Xena?
Yeah.
Oh boy, that was good times.
We wouldn't have Spartacus, the Starz TV show.
Oh yeah, I didn't. I watched some of that. It is
a lot of swinging dick. <right? clears
throat> Yeah.
That's yeah.
We talked about Thomas's greatest fear, and watching Spartacus is halfway there. It's just a bunch of strong, naked men. Just I gotta get out of this room.
For those who weren't privy to that conversation earlier, Tom's greatest fear is being trapped in a room full of men that have boners.
Thank you. I feel like everyone at this table has the exact same fear.
I don't want to be there.
I wouldn't want to be there.
Mm-mm.
I don't think anybody in their right mind would want
to
be
Nobody
there.
Nobody wants to be there.
No.
I've That's seen a couple films
it's
that
like
led me
walking
to...
into an LVAC freaking locker room and just being like, why? Why is everybody naked?
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, I don't go there anymore.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. It's weird. Mm. It's like they have a free hall pass to just freaking strut. Yeah, check it out.
The one that's worse than that is the one person in that locker room that's FaceTiming someone, too.
Oh, God. What is a women's locker room like? Is it as amazing as I imagine, or is it as terrifying as it probably
is? Is it like they portrayed it in Road Trip?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is it super cool?
We're all just giving each other shoulder massages.
Maybe. I mean, if you have a sore shoulder, help somebody out.
Okay, Maximum Overdrive. Final thoughts? Not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
I'm glad.
Not a great movie.
No one said it was.
Music made it better somehow.
Yeah.
I was like, AC/DC. Okay, I can listen to this. And I was really confused as to why it was so hard for them to pump gas. They were just so exhausted from pumping gas. And that was that's what really stuck with me throughout the whole thing. I do want to talk about
that's your hang up.
I was like, why?
That's the hang up.
This was back before they had those nice little like things that would hold up the handle. You actually had keep the handle.
Oh, that's true. We're used to those modern.
Yeah, the lazy ones. Where you just flick it down.
You
and
can't
it stays.
Overfill. Yeah. You know, unless you feel using gas cans, then you'll just spray. You'll spray gas all over the place.
This guy's crazy with his gas cans.
This guy is a crazy gas can guy.
This guy knows how to gas can.
He's just spraying it all over the place. I'm like, Tom, the hole's right there. He's like, I'm sorry.
He was Britney-ing.
Like just shaving my head, spraying gasoline on people.
He went full Zoolander.
Oh, boy.
Orange mocha frappuccino. I want to talk about just that ending credits. We kind of mentioned it before, but the whole like, oh, by the way, the U.S. government has a space laser.
No, it was the Russians.
It was the Russians. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, the Russians had a space laser that shot down a UFO.
Laser.
It's very ill-tempered laser.
That ending credit scene, little thing, sounded more interesting than the movie that we watched.
Yeah, I get that.
And that bothered me a little bit.
No. It makes total sense because you paint your own picture now.
Yeah. Right? You walk away from it with more story up here.
That's right. I'm like, hey, hold on a second. What happened with the Russians?
Go forth into the world with your imagination.
And lasers.
The pen is mightier than the sword. Just go with it.
So you did it on purpose?
Stephen King knows the power of the written word.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is all intentional.
He bookended it. Bookended it.
They want to make him watch this stupid movie. And at the end, I'm going to give him just this little feather of like, this could be cool.
I mean, remember what year this movie came out in, right?
87?
I mean, the quality of Coke in the Ghoulies 80s was outstanding.
It was probably the best Coke.
Yeah. 80s Coke and 80s tits.
Oh, 80s tits are not good.
No. That's a chef's kiss.
70s tits now. I remember what Logan's Run. It's a PG movie with more tits in it than you've ever seen in your life.
Logan's
it's
Run.
It's like a PG movie.
And there's smoke shows. Every single one of them.
Oh, yeah. Chicks were hot in the 70s. 80s, they took a break. The 90s, maybe towards the end of the 90s.
Late 90s.
They'd already spent like a decade not wearing bras. So that takes its toll.
They're all just flopping around.
God bless feminism. Ruin them titties for us. You know, if this movie had a little nudity, it would have been better.
It would have been. I thought that's the direction they were going to go with the hitchhiker chick.
It's the 80s, right? It's an 80s horror movie with no nudity.
Yeah, and it was rated R. And by the end of it, you're like, but why?
Lots of swearing.
There were like some dead bodies, but it wasn't gory at all. And it wasn't scary at all.
No, it wasn't scary in any. At any moment, was there any fear?
No.
No.
It was funny.
Yeah.
Like, it
was
comical.
I was afraid it was going to be longer.
It didn't need to be.
No, it was like an hour and a half.
Yeah, it was just right. Yeah, I got home from work and finished it before my girlfriend got home from work. So it was just the perfect length. It was like, just fit right in there. Just burn the right amount of time.
I'm going to give it 1.5 stars for me.
Okay.
Dom? That's not fair. It's not going to be like dominated for anything, right? Maybe soundtrack.
Nominated
for anything, right? Okay. No one's going to put it up for best sound effects or best costume design. Nothing. It's not going to win anything, right? No. So just take all that crap off the table, right?
No stars?
It's not going to be a good movie, right? You just know that going into it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an 80s campy horror movie.
By Stephen King,
which makes it better, depending on who you ask. Mm-hmm. It has Lisa Simpson in it.
Sure.
It's got Emilio in it. The Green Goblin. Which is the scariest of all goblins. It's got military grade technology. It's got a plot line that makes no sense. You can't make any sense out of any of it, right?
Like, the machines come alive.
Is the whole
or
world
they're remote
machines?
Control.
They are remote
also
control.
Also Comet.
But we don't understand any of that until there's one little blurb about the alien space. Okay, it doesn't make any sense. All that aside, I had a good time. That's a 3.5 right there.
Wow.
That's a 3.5 right there. Right. 3.5 out of 5. That's a fun movie. Shut up. It's 80s. The more you find out about this movie, the more it entertains.
Okay.
It brought us Sam Raimi.
I mean,
it also brought us no more Stephen King directed movies.
Was this the last one ever?
I think so.
It was the first and the last.
Yeah. Wow. They let him do it one time.
They're like, bro, no more.
You went over budget on cocaine, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, he did write Sleepwalkers for the screen. It wasn't one of his books, but this was his only directorial effort, I
believe. Yeah, that is, I'm pretty sure that's correct, yeah. So 3.5, man.
3.5.
That's a fun movie.
Okay.
You don't even have to watch it. It can just like be on in the background. You don't got to follow the story.
No, you just pop in once in a while.
And
you glance
over and some dude gets hit by a truck and you're like, oh! And then there's an explosion.
A Bible gets ran over.
The Bible salesman gets run over.
Yeah.
All the assholes die.
Yep.
It's great.
Yeah, Stephen King loves his bullies.
And he's a big bully guy. He must have got beat the fuck up when he was a kid. I'm not going to lie.
How about you?
I'm good.
Okay. I wanted to apologize to you all week. I was very nervous that you were going to be mad at me. I literally was like, oh, God, I feel like this was a mistake. Maybe we should have just watched Slapshot. Alex is going to be so mad at me. But I had a good time. However, I'm not drinking this week. And that made this so much less enjoyable. So I been able to have a couple of beverages while I was watching this, I would have been having a great time. For a Stephen King movie, that's how I'm rating this in the realm of Stephen King. This is terrible. So I'm not going to give it a one-star crap fest, but for me, in the realm of Stephen King, whom I love, I'm going to give this 2 green goblins.
Okay. All right. Kadesh.
So unlike many people at this table, I have a deep-seated hatred and loathing of Stephen King.
Whoa! I just found this out today.
I feel like he is highly overrated as a writer.
Wow. Every time he says it, I'm like, he doesn't mean it.
Now,
he's got a smirk on his face right now.
He does, because he thinks he's better than Stephen King.
I don't think I'm better than him. I just think that he's entirely overrated as a writer. He's great at coming up with ideas, but as a writer, he's very, very bad. He's very inconsistent.
What?
And you can see this in how like they adapt his movies. Like until recently, other than The Shining, I don't think that there was a Stephen King movie that I actually really enjoyed.
Yeah, they're all bad. You're right there.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, like there's been this kind of Kingissance recently with like the remake of It. And
did you make up another new word on this podcast?
I did. Yes.
Britneying and Kingissance.
Kingissance.
God, you are just
on fire today.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'd be interested to see if like they could. If some talented filmmaker could take this movie and rejigger it into something that was actually good. So
yeah, it's called Fast 10.
Well, it's called Day of the Dead, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But essentially, like, this movie from start to finish, like, as soon as, like, we settled on this movie, I was just like, oh, God, I would have rather been watching Repo Man. But I hated this movie. None of it made sense. No. I didn't find it funny. I didn't find it charming. The soundtrack was annoying. I like AC/DC, and I found the soundtrack annoying.
I did the same thing. Like, by the end of the movie, I was just like, enough already.
It was too much of a good thing, basically. Like, every scene had an AC/DC song playing in it. It was very annoying. The fact that Stephen King was just, like, coked out of his mind to the point where George Romero had to come in and ghost direct this movie.
That makes it better, doesn't it?
I don't know, man. Like,
I don't know, man.
The confidence of a cokehead at work is unprecedented.
I just find Stephen King very annoying. I don't like him. I've never liked him.
Oh,
and this movie.
You don't mean that.
This movie, more than anything, kind of embodies everything that's wrong with Stephen King, and so I got to give this movie a 1-star crap.
Oh.
You're
going to
get
crazy.
Despite the fact that it's responsible for Evil Dead 2, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, and Sam Raimi's career, arguably, and stuff like that, this movie was just awful. If I could give it 0 stars, I might. I might.
What is happening in Tom's lip right now?
I'm finding it difficult to argue with him.
You can't.
Because you're right. It is that bad. But you put all of that aside.
Come on, man.
Yeah, he's put all that aside.
Yeah.
3.5 stars.
Gravity doesn't exist, Tom.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Stephen King's terrible.
Oh, that's rude. I probably own like 30 books on my bookshelf are all Stephen King books I've read. Read The Dark Tower and tell me it sucks.
The movie sucked.
Oh, I know. We will not talk about that ever again.
I've read enough Stephen King to
Did hold you me read over. The Dark Tower?
I I refuse to read.
It's a stack of books this big. I'll loan them to you.
I know what it is.
He's not gonna.
It's so good.
If you say so.
I legit it.
Oh my God! Look what you did to him.
This is the series that Stephen King wrote himself into, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You snarky elitist. God damn it! Just it makes sense if you read it.
Yeah, nothing about ego or cocaine there.
Right? No. Because the whole thing's about multiple dimensions. Oh, and yeah. At one point, they go to the creator's dimension.
Do they go to the maximum overdrive dimension?
Shut up! I don't want to play this game anymore.
Do they go to the sleepwalker's dimension?
No, nobody goes there. But they go to Derry. They go to wherever they are in the stand. It's
Do they go to the cosmic turtle?
They do.
Okay.
Yeah, he's dead, though.
Spoilers.
Yeah. For a book that was published 20 years ago. I'm sorry.
Is Matthew McConaughey in it?
I wish. Matthew McConaughey was a great Man in Black.
All right.
And on that note.
That's it for the podcast today, guys. Thank you so much. If you're a Stephen King fan, I know Kadesh probably just plucked your wings off. And
ugh.
It's like Tinkerbell, you know, every time you clap, they come back to life. That's kind of like Jude. Jude claps at Stephen King's and another Stephen King fan comes to life. And every time Kadesh is like, I don't believe it. They're like, they just die.
He don't mean it.
Why does she say it in a southern accent every time?
Curtis, I don't want this.
All right, folks, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to subscribe and like if you're brand new here. And if you would like to support what we do, go to saltynerdclub.com. Sign up for our club membership area. We have a ton of stuff for you to hang out and watch. We have commentaries. We've got reviews on classic sci-fi, all kinds of really, really cool things. Goes a long way. $5 a month. It's not that much. And you get to support a cool podcast. So go to saltynerdclub.com. On that note, stay salty, folks.
You're going to get us in an awful lot of trouble, man.